everybody. Welcome to episode number 550 of this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and written, produced, and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Folks, this week we're going deep, deep into the world of atomic level process engineering with the amazing Karen Kanarik from LAM Research. Karen and I are talking all about how AI can help speed up the process and cut down the cost of chip innovation. The engineering and AI challenges this research was looking to help solve, and the strategies that Karen and her team at LAM Research developed over the course of this groundbreaking research. Also this week, I take a closer look at some new research from the University of Hawaii at Manoa that suggests that electrons from Earth may be forming water on the moon. But before we head up to the moon, let's bring in Karen from LAM Research. Hi, Karen. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you, Amelia. I'm really happy to be here today.
Excellent. Okay, so we're talking about LAM's new research about how we can speed up the process and cut the cost of chip innovation with the help of AI. But before we dig into the details, Karen, can you talk a bit about the challenges you were looking to solve with this new research? And we're talking about engineer-related challenges and AI-related challenges, right?
Right. Okay. So let me dive right in then. So this study, it's a step towards addressing one of the grand challenges of chip making, which is the increasing cost and time of process engineering, especially as the industry is going to EUV and 3D structures. And as you and your audience probably already know, that process engineering, it's essential for every advanced chip created, but it's often laborious, tedious, and it's really getting costly. For the past, say, 50 years, it's been done by human engineers with PhDs. And what this study sought to assess is whether AI could be beneficial in reducing the cost of the process engineering. We here at LAM Research, the reason why we cared about this problem in the semiconductor industry is because we're making the equipment that makes the chips, so we end up being on the front lines of this problem. Oh, and you related to the challenges on the engineer side and the AI side. So I want to explain to the audience that from the process engineer point of view, this process engineering challenge is difficult because they're facing 100 trillion possible parameter combinations. We call these recipes. And the physics behind those processes are extraordinarily complex. They only have a limited number of tries to get it right. So you would think that a computer or AI would more easily address and tackle this type of problem, say with big data analytics. But the problem from the point of view of AI is what we refer to in the paper as little data due to the high cost of data acquisition. What I mean is that there's insufficient amount of data available to make a reliable model. And that makes the predicting process for AI quite challenging, especially that it doesn't have domain knowledge.
That makes sense. Now, Karen, I was really interested in how your team benchmarked the performance of computer algorithms relative to human engineers. You developed a process engineering game, right? Tell my audience more about this.
That's right. It was a game. So we wanted to benchmark the performance of humans versus the computers because it wasn't really clear in advance who would win, the humans or the AI. So originally, what I did is I proposed to kind of play a game, have a competition, and let humans and computers compete on real wafers in the laboratory. But my boss at the time, Rick Gottscho, who's also co-author on the paper, he pointed out that that would be rather expensive and the variability in the lab would make it difficult for us to interpret results. So he's the one who suggested that we run this game virtually. And the advantage of running this virtually became clear pretty early on. We were able to run as many games as we wanted over and over again in an apples to apples comparison. And in the end, we ended up running hundreds, thousands of games, which helped us collect the statistics on the AI performance. And from the point of view of the participant or the player, like in the real lab, the participants would pick a recipe condition, and then we'd run it through the simulator. And then effectively at the end of the day, it had this look and feel of a real process.
That's super cool. Now, can you talk about the computer algorithm benchmarking in this research as well?
All right. So when we let the computer compete alone, they really did not do very well at all. I'll give you a comparison. So our expert human process engineer took $105,000 in order to reach target. The computers took more on the order of more than $700,000 to reach target. So the good news is they were able to develop the process and reach target, but you can see at a much higher cost. So from our point of view, they utterly failed. When we looked at their trajectories, we could see that the computer algorithms simply could not navigate this large process space on their own, at least.
Wow. Now, can we also talk about the strategies you developed over the course of your research as well?
Sure. So as we were running this competition, we noticed that the human experts were particularly good at the beginning of development. They had very rapid progress towards target. And this is a regime that we called rough tuning. Since the computers seemed lost when we ran them on their own, we decided to try giving them some of the human guidance in what we ended up calling a human-first, computer-last approach. And in this strategy, the computer algorithms, they had the advantage in the fine-tuning stage, but only after they were given that human guidance.
So, Karen, what was your final conclusion?
Okay, when we combined the human expert with the computer advantages in this human first, computer last strategy that I just described, that's where we found the best results. And we found up to a 50% cost savings when we transferred from the human to the computer at the optimal times. So we concluded that humans remain essential to process engineering, but that AI can alleviate the burden of the tedious and laborious aspects of process engineering, that fine tuning stage. So the audience should know that the AI, it's not replacing the people anytime soon. What we found, it's more about making the people more productive to alleviate them from that drudgery and then freeing them up to focus on the more creative aspects of process development.
I love that. That is super cool, Karen. All right. So before I let you go, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, since you haven't been on my show before, I'm going to send you my standard off-the-cuff. So, Karen, if you could have one meal right now, doesn't matter if it's on the other side of the world, you need a passport to get there, what would you have?
Okay. So let me think about that a moment. That's a good question. I mean, the first thing that pops in my mind, because we're talking about chips, I want to say potato chips and wafers, but for something else, there is a food that I often crave, and it sounds really simple, but I'll bring this one up. So there's this bagel. It looks like a large bagel, and it's in Jerusalem. It's bagel covered in sesame seeds, and they give this packet of a spice they call za'atar next to it that has, it's this green, salty, spicy, dry powder, and you dip the bagel in, and the bagel's always warm, and somehow you can't reproduce it anywhere else. Wish I could make it myself, but it doesn't ever turn out the same, and it always seems to be something that I crave.
I love it. I have not heard about that before, and it sounds absolutely delicious. Well, Karen, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Let's head to the moon, shall we? So here on Fish Fry, you could say, I'm a bit obsessed with anything space related. Back in August, I chatted with Mona Atara from Posit Science about BrainHQ's new computerized brain training for astronauts during long-distance space travel. And in that episode, I also examined new research that showed that microwave technology could release water from lunar soil. But how did that water get to the moon in the first place? Well, a team of researchers from the University of Hawaii at Manoa believe that it's actually high-energy electrons from the Earth's plasma sheet that have added to the formation of water on the surface of the moon. Okay, so before we dig into the details, let's back up a sec. So, surrounding our dear Earth is a force field called the magnetosphere, and it protects us from damaging radiation from the sun and space weathering. So, solar winds actually push and reshape this magnetosphere, making it have a long tail on the night side. The plasma sheet in this magnetotail is really interesting. It's full of high-energy electrons and ions that are sourced from solar winds and maybe the Earth itself. So, how does this affect the moon? Well, in previous studies, researchers mostly concentrated their efforts on studying the role that these high-energy ions had on the space weathering aspects of the moon, and considered that it was probably just solar wind that was changing the surface of the moon and could be the biggest contributing factor in creating water on its surface. But Shuai Li, assistant researcher in the UH Manoa School of Ocean and Earth Science and Technology, thought that maybe there was a different reason. So building on their previous research that showed oxygen in the Earth's magnetotail was actually rusting iron in the moon's polar regions, Li thought that the key to water on the moon may actually be due to surface weathering when the moon passes through the Earth's magnetotail, since that area is almost completely shielded from solar wind, but not the sun's light photons. Li explains their research like this. This provides a natural laboratory for studying the formation processes of lunar surface water. When the moon is outside of the magnetotail, the lunar surface is bombarded with solar wind. Inside the magnetotail, there are almost no solar wind photons, and water formation was expected to drop to nearly zero. To my surprise, the remote sensing observations showed that the water formation in the Earth's magnetotail is almost identical to the time when the moon was outside the Earth's magnetotail. This indicates that, in the magnetotail, there may be additional formation processes or new sources of water not directly associated with the implementation of solar wind photons. In particular, radiation by high-energy electrons exhibits similar effects as solar wind protons. Altogether, this finding and my previous research of rusty lunar poles indicate that Mother Earth is strongly tied with its moon in many unrecognized aspects. Li and her team from the University of Hawaii at Manoa plan to further their research through NASA's Artemis programs. They will continue to monitor the plasma environment and the water content on the lunar polar surface when the moon is at different phases during the traverse of the Earth's magnetotail. Super cool, right? So if you want even more information about this study or human-machine collaboration for improving semiconductor process development at Lam Research, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com and in the description for this week's YouTube episode as well. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you would like to follow my personal Twitter account, it is AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, hosted by me. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, or Apple Podcasts. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or, heck, you just want to chat, shoot me a line at Amelia, that's AMELIA, at eejournal.com, or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of September 22nd, 2023, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.